You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 160. Today is Thursday, October 31st. Happy Halloween to all the listeners tuning in on the podcast. If you're on the live stream, welcome as well. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve Gisuelli. And in the spirit of Halloween, Steve, we've got a little SP show. We're theming scary values in the 2025 SP landscape. But very excited to, again, take the off-season 10,000-foot view, look at the ever-changing season-to-season starting pitcher landscape. And we're going kind of bottom to top here from the very earliest all the way to pick 300 and beyond. We're going to be talking about a little bit of our PL mock too early draft. We always like to glimpse at what we've seen in that. We'll also, I mean, Steve, you might have already been there, but it's my first glimpse because I've kind of held off at looking at true ADP. So it's always fun to kind of look at, you know, the earliest grooves on what the industry is doing and where we feel there might be some values or possibly some fear factor on Halloween. So we got a lot to talk about and get into. It should be a lot of fun, man. You know, the playoffs has been a lot of fun. I know it's World Series. I've got the phone propped up as well out there in New York. You got to give me a brief glimpse of what it's been like, even though, you know, it's probably hasn't been as exciting as at least in the past day or two. But how's it going, man? Tell me how World Series local baseball is.
Good. Yeah. Last time we talked, I think we were in the middle of the championship CS. Series. Yeah. Cause that long layoff, I think the Dodgers
layoff is off,
ended
off
Sunday
week. And
the World Series didn't start till Friday. So like, there was definitely a buzz, just like going to work in the city every day, but they got to shorten, like they got to make it so that it's 2 or 3 days after the conclusion of the final CS. Like, you know, okay, yeah, sure, maybe one team will have 5 days off versus three, but at that point, you know, it's not like the baseball or hockey stadiums where they're booked for concerts and everything like that. Like, baseball stadiums, especially at this time of year in the fall when it gets cold, are pretty open. So that has to be shortened. That kind of killed a little bit of the buzz. And then obviously the Yankees going down so quickly, 3-0. But now as we record this, looking like they're showing some more signs of life. I mean, that first game was just, I remember you texted me like, just wow, like what an instant classic. So,
dude,
yeah,
that was such a baseball.
It's been great. Despite it being 3-0, the whole playoffs in general, and I mean, just because of that one game, the World Series has been entertaining from a outsider perspective without a dog in the fight, right?
Yeah, it has. I heard a weird thing that should the CSs have wrapped up by game five, so I think it was like a one game away, it would have been Tuesday instead of Friday.
There was a rule where if both games ended after five, the World Series would have started, you know, 2-3 days early or whatever it was. But because the Mets and Dodgers went six, that was not the case.
Pushed it out.
But they just got to make it so that it starts however many days. I know that that's easier said than done, and sometimes, you know,
it killed the buzz.
But there have to be a way to figure out, okay, like a rolling start date based on the finish of the series.
That's like the equivalent of, I mean, we all know, you know, like you're golfing, you have a couple beers, and then you're, you know, you wait like an hour and a half till your next thing, and you're like, listen, man, we got to keep it rolling here.
Yeah.
So, dude, that Friday night game, we had homemade chili. Speaking of, I cracked a cold beer. Alyssa sat down and watched it. You know, she doesn't always watch baseball with me. And yeah, that game was just a gem. And it was like the perfect fall weather. And I was like, man, this is what it's all about. And the game did not disappoint. And that's kind of the segue, Steve. before we get into a fantastic show, one of the best ones when we get fresh perspective on starting pitching, I had to go thematic here. I know we've done tricks and treats in the past, but for Halloween, we've never really talked about baseball costumes, and I thought, you know, it could be topical for somebody to do.
Yeah, you're the holiday baseball guy. You got all the baseball ornaments.
The Christmas ornaments. And I thought, you know, if I were in L.A., like a Freddie Freeman Terminator face, but with the jersey, could be very topical. And then just ones of the past that have stood out. There definitely in the Midwest was a lot of Steve Bartman going around back in the day. I got a shout after the Cardinals' 11th championship in 2011. They had the rally squirrels throughout that whole playoffs where they would like sneak onto the field. I don't know if that was just a local thing or if it was national, but the rally squirrels were everything. So my mom was a rally squirrel. My dad was Pujols, you know, and he had kind of a thicker frame. So he got away with that one. And then, yeah, Sandlot, I've seen a fantastic Squints Wendy Peppercorn combo at a Halloween party that we do every year. And also shout out to TJ, one of our loyal listeners in the Listener League as well, who did a league of their own with his wife Laura as well, and they crushed it. So yeah, just wanted to give a quick rundown on some baseball themed Halloween costumes. Have you seen any? Does anything come to mind, or have you ever dabbled in the baseball costumes?
I have not. I mean, I'm sure as a kid I was like a baseball player.
Yeah, just like a stock. Yeah.
Shout out to Rich, loyal listener of the podcast, home league member. And his girlfriend are being Squints and Wendy Peppercorn. This Halloween. Also, my good buddy Dan, who was once a guest host on the show, rocks the Bartman headphones like to this day, like the headphones that came with the compact disc player that like, wrap around your ear. Bartman so famously wore. So I don't know if he has a Halloween costume, but he could definitely pull that off one year if he wanted to.
He could do the Bartman. Dan must have been pretty devastated about the Mets.
He was more proud of the run and like excited at what they're building. We always joke that like he just likes to, you know, he doesn't like the pressure. He likes perpetually being in a rebuild phase, but and accumulating prospects and not having any stakes on the line. But he's more excited about what they're building, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, Stearns has done a great job already, and then to have the bankroll and the backing of Steve Cohen, it's taken a little bit longer. Steve Cohen came out and said he wants to win a World Series within the first 3 to 5 years. I guess next year, if they do it, it would be within 5 years. But that was kind of like, I think if he would change something, I think he would change that.
We'll be talking about
that
Mets.
Saying, but yeah, it's exciting times to be a Mets fan.
It is.
That's the overall takeaway from him. Yeah.
That's valid. And we mentioned the WAF Listener League there a time or two, but we realized in the rundown, we have not yet shouted the WAF Listener League champion, who is Mr. Adam Lazarus. If you are tuning in, congratulations. It was pretty dominant. It was like J-Ram, William Contreras. I think you said Class A, so definitely addressed closers. Steve and I were pretty middle of the pack for it being our title sponsor league.
Both beaten by the Goon Squad. I don't know. Do we have a board bet with them for anything?
I don't know, but Tom will bring it up. TJ will bring it up. So we had to give a shout out there. But without further ado, the SP landscape, which can be scary to navigate, Steve. There's always the fear factor that you have teached and trained well on of jumping in too soon and kind of over-investing in pitching. I think we talked about the pitcher list too early mock, and that I kind of realized that it felt like batters grew thin, very thin around pick 100. So I will be back in on that philosophy of waiting on starting pitching. It has gone well this year in the home league that is all important. I had a trifecta of Luis Gil, Ronaldo Lopez, and Jack Flaherty that I was able to find and totally pass with like a top three staff in the league. So I'm back in on that. But yeah, you can jump in too soon. You can also wait too long. And we've talked about kind of a learning going into this season to remember that ADP is kind of a number. And if there are some of our guys that we're not scared to miss out on them based on wanting to wait a round or two. So this show, again, is really, and especially for me, Steve, I know I went on my rant last episode about wanting to kind of ease into off-season prep. This is like the shotgun start for me. Like once I'm doing the full, in real time, look at this pitcher landscape, I'm getting natural first impressions on the pod of where I'm liking the pockets of value and everything. So love the show. Want to hear your thoughts at the top here, and then we'll jump in because, man, we got a ton of names, a ton of tiers and ranges, and I can't wait to get into it.
I know you mentioned at the top of the show, like getting into ADP for the first time, and I say ADP in air quotes because there's been nine 2025 drafts already. I guess, you know, from an ADP perspective, an actual, you know, ranking, that's not that many, but it's also crazy that the World Series isn't over and there's already been nine NFBC drafts. Yeah, there are a lot of sickos out there. But we love you just as much, you know.
So with that said, I mean, the obvious caveat is there will be a lot of movement now and March on these.
Most, if not all of these are draft and hold. I think they're all draft and hold, right? Some gladiators are starting soon, but like they're all like deeper draft and holds, like, you know, that slight change in approach. No waivers, obviously. So it's a small sample, but it's fun to start to look at it, especially from a pitcher perspective. I think this is kind of like an SP workshop. Like we're going through the names and looking at the tiers, looking where, oh, hey, this is where I want to jump in. This is where I want to avoid. This is a pocket of names that I like, and would feel comfortable getting, you know, any five of these guys, any 10 of these guys. I think that's kind of like the baseline, at least, that we've developed on this show and in our process.
For still formulating.
Pitchers. Yeah. It's like find pockets of pitchers where you feel comfortable taking a few names. And that can be earlier, right? If you want to get, like we always say that, like, right? If you do want to get Skeens and Skubal, that's totally fine. Just know how to navigate it later on when you're you know, trying to fill your hitting needs or your reliever needs. It's a fun thing to go through. I think it's something that I pride myself on, and I think it's the easiest. Not that it's easy, but you could. I find it much easier to find value in pitching than hitting, which is why I jump into this right away to get into 2025 mode or next season mode in the off season.
Totally agree. Like it's not quite a coin flip, and there's certainly more that goes into it. But the fact that there is a coin flip mentality on almost any pitcher in terms of will they return value, it does seem like where you can invest between, I don't know, pick 125 and 250, you will hit on a few of those guys, which is always so exciting because the hits at that range usually are outperforming their draft costs by multiple rounds, which you've done a great job in years past. And like I said, last year and even the year before, it's gone really well for me to where I'm not changing that. But yeah, we will talk about the early ones as well and kind of weigh in on if we were to do that philosophy, the guys we like. But like you said, Steve, it is a workshop. And the final disclaimer before we hop in is we're still kind of formulating our opinions. It's not like what we say right now it goes for the entirety of the offseason as we continue to dig in and look closer at some of these guys. But these are the first impressions. And taking the biggest picture, I wanted to start with the PL mock that we did. PL mock draft we'll all be hopping on. Actually, Steve and I will be hopping on a podcast with Nick for the first time ever. So usually it's just one of us kind of mano-a-mano.
Well,
we
had our own teams.
Right. So now it's a podcast.
Now we're together.
We'll be talking about that, but looking at that draft collectively, I like to look at it versus last year's draft because it can just kind of give you a quick inclination before you go to ADP. And a couple of takeaways that I pulled from looking at this year's versus last year, and I'll just kind of rattle through these, but this year there were four starting pitchers that went in the first three rounds. And it's worth noting on all this, that room tends to fade pitching a little bit because this that's is Nick's
nothing,
philosophy.
This is nothing like an NFBC draft or even most home leagues, I would say.
Right.
There is a 1 to 2 round discount across the board on pitchers in this
certainly to start
in this draft. It's a pitcherless draft. Nick's process is, you know, a reason why I have that process, and his philosophy is to find pitchers later, grab pitchers later in drafts, and identify aces later and wait on pitching. So that's sort of the overall philosophy of this room. It's a pitcherless website. That's the pitcherless mantra.
It is.
Yeah, I would say in a way. So keep that in mind when going
that
through
these numbers. We are looking at this versus last year's pitcherless one. So yeah, at least it's a controlled variable. So this year, there were four starting pitchers that went in the first three round. Last year, there were only three. Okay. This year, I thought this one was kind of interesting. This year, SP9 and SP10 went at pick 59 and 60. So that's right at the end of the fifth round. Uh-huh. Last year, SP9 and 10 went 48 and 52. So like a full 10 picks ahead. So that was around sooner than this year where, so even though, yeah, it gets delayed, there was kind of a squeeze between like round four and round five. But the most interesting thing, at least in the room we were in, which it might not mean anything, but there was a 17 pick gap from four straight starting pitchers, the SP 5, 6, 7, and 8, which, spoiler alert, was Corbin Burnes, Cole Reagans, Garrett Crochet, and Logan Gilbert. 17 picks later was Kirby and Imanaga. So that was just interesting to me of like, is that kind of a sign of a teardrop? However, when we get into ADP, we'll kind of look at that closer. Last thing I noted is the first eight rounds, which is pretty much the top 100. This year's draft, there were 22 pitchers taken. Last year, there was 26. So take that for what you will. But overall, the top end starting pitchers were faded even more than last year. You could make that observation. Even though there were four in the first three rounds, everything else was kind of scooted back.
The first tier was bumped up a little bit. Then the second tier of aces was bumped down, and then there was a bigger gap, I guess, between like the top 10 and then top, you know, 15 or so. I'm sure we'll get into it, but I think Kirby, at least in industry leagues, and as the offseason goes on, will definitely be bumped up into that group with, you know, the 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, essentially. And then like a gap to Imanaga would be my educated guess on how the industry and just ADP trickles out throughout the year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So to get into actual ADP, so like you said, Steve, this is only like nine drafts through the month of October. Was just looking at the top 10 starting pitchers to go off the board. So I saw this, and I'll kind of mention tiers here, if you will. The first tier is Paul Skeens, who is really the only first rounder right now in like a 12-team format, just around pick 11. Then Tarek Skubal is right around pick 14. So that's kind of tier one is Skeens and Skubal. Not a huge surprise there. Kind of tier 1.5 is Zach Wheeler. He's all by his lonesome at pick 20. So near the back end of the second round. And then you go all the way to like middle of the third round, where there's a pretty, compared to what we've had so far, a sizable tier three. And tier three is led by Logan Gilbert at pick 31. And I had to kind of stop and just say, here we are. Logan Gilbert is SP4 after years of us kind of looking at him between pick 80 and 130 and saying, oh, if the, you know, he's just got a fastball and now the stuff's catching up with the command. He's here. And the fourth pitcher off the board. Right after him, we got Chris Sale at 34. There's George Kirby at 35, more or less. Corbin Burns is right there at 35 as well. And Jacob DeGrom at 36. Talk about a Halloween scare. Is will we be in on DeGrom is a question. But that's tier three, if you will. Or you could argue tier two if Zach Wheeler's just kind of in the middle. And then the back end of the top 10 starting pitchers, Dylan Cease at 44, Cole Reagans at 49. And then, like you had said, Steve, that there might be the returning injured guys of like Strider, Glasnow, right at the end after Cole Reagans could find their way into the top 10 there. But let's pause there. I want to hear your thoughts overall. Were any of these surprises or any interesting observations? I know there's room to move here, but it's always fun to look at this top 10 and be like, man, these are what will be likely be SP1s around the entire industry.
Sorry, as I look away at my screen, but the Dodgers have the bases loaded and no outs as we record this.
Now, why am I on a lag? Because YouTube TV only shows me a guy on first and second. So now we got to do the whole thing.
I'm old school. I'm not a cord. I'm the opposite. I'm not a cord cutter.
Well, do your best to just like gasp and not give any context. Yeah, so we don't have
space. This is interesting. I still think this is a little bit deflated. As far as the prices, like I think Skeens will comfortably be in the first round. So will Scooble as proper draft season approaches. And I wouldn't be surprised if Wheeler was bumped up and there was a clear top three that go before the mid of round two, especially in NFBC drafts. If I were to get a pitcher early, like I would be pretty comfortable. You know, if Skeens fell to the turn, which I doubt he would ever really would. And really going anyone through like the top 10 or 11, like in NFBC drafts, like I'm going to try to grab the last person of this group. Just because, you know, in the weekly move league, it is important to like anchor your rotation. I think that's a lesson learned that I have. From being not so good in NFBC drafts over the years. So any of those names, even Strider and Glasnow, I think I would lean towards them. I'll get into it later, but like the way that I think the best way to approach pitching risk is that every single pitcher has it, and you kind of just got to be lucky not to, you know, draw the shortest straw. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there's like – yes, I know there's amazing studies and detailed studies about past injury and days on the IL leading to next year, but like any one of these guys can get Tommy John or a shoulder injury at any point. And like I don't think the difference between even someone like DeGrom, who has been the extreme end of that, versus like Kirby. Like I'm not confident enough in projecting that Kirby is that much safer injury-wise.
Well, in that case, DeGrom should be right there with Scooble, right?
Yeah. If I were to rank pitchers based on the fact that I'm kind of just throwing injury risk out the window, I would have DeGrom like either above or right below Wheeler.
Yeah.
Like I like DeGrom more than Logan Gilbert this year. It's just,
yeah, I mean,
that's much more risky. I understand that, but I'm also,
there is risk with
doing like, I don't know which one of these guys is staying healthy. Well, I'm just going to pick the best one. Maybe that's not the best way to do it. But I am essentially throwing injury risk out the window because I don't know which one's going to get hurt. They all could get hurt. None could get hurt. Like, you kind of just got to, you know, roll the dice and make sure you're not the one holding the hot potato.
I agree with that. I think I'm, like, probably taking out, like, the 5% on either side.
Sure.
Of like, I would bet a lot of my equity that we'll see more innings from like a Fromber than a DeGrom or something. But I know what you're saying. I think this is, it's interesting. Like my thought was, I just don't know if I'm ready to like anoint Logan Gilbert as somebody that's worth like a late second round, early third round. Sale, it's different because it's just like we've seen the top of the mountaintop. My biggest takeaway from this group, we'll get to it a little bit later. I think I'm kind of fading George Kirby here, Steve. I think an early draft this, not that for me is Imanaga with a 35 pick discount, at least right now, versus Kirby going at 35. Just because I feel like they're very similar. You're getting like 15 more innings from Kirby, but the ratios aren't all that different. And even like the K, you know, the K minus BB, like I know Kirby's like absurd with like a 4% career walk rate, but I just don't know that. Like last year it was like a 3.5 ERA and Imanaga was a 2.9. I just don't know that I'm gaining that much of that stability. Like I don't think it was a fluke for Shota. So that's just an early one that I thought. And then last is, I still think Reagan's is exciting being at the very end of this. So those were a couple things that kind of jumped out at me, but I probably will not be shopping in this range because I think from here on in, it starts to be like, oh wow, there's the glob has moved up from 50 to 130 type of thing. Which any closing thoughts on that, or do you want we can get into that 50s and beyond range?
Yeah, on Kirby, real quick. I understand the hesitation, and yes, last year was disappointing, especially you know considering now we really have like 3 years of basically like a middling K rate of 23.3% for his career. He was 23% last year. You know, that being said, it was a tough year. He had a 3.5 ERA. There were plenty of blowups, and frustrations throughout the year. Like, you know, that's the issue with going in from off season. I think we've talked about it the other way, going from off season mode to in season mode, then going from in season mode to off season mode. Like, you don't understand. Like, you look at Kirby's line as a whole, 191, 353 ERA. Yeah, the K rate wasn't great, but like, yeah, this was a pitcher that you definitely enjoyed rostering all year. Like, no, people did not. Like, there was some groans from George Kirby managers throughout the whole year, and he always did seem like a tweak away, and you know, is lacking the swing and miss of the true aces. That being said, considering that he was tinkering so much, and did have quite a few blow-up starts and just the 3.5 ERA, you know, it was a career best 11.4% swing strike rate, which again isn't amazing, but it's an improvement on what he's done the first 2 years. He has the 7 pitches, all of which have all of which but the slider have above average stuff. And the slider is still pretty good, at 110. It's just the league average slider, stuff plus is 115. So like if there's some improvement in that pitch, like, I could see him being someone that's overlooked, right? Like he has that elite command. He has the 7 pitches,
the floor is,
I guess, six, because there's one that's a cutter that's a knuckleball, which is hilarious. I think he threw it on Tim Wakefield's birthday or anniversary.
Oh yeah,
his
that's
passing,
right. That's right.
Which was awesome. I think there's room for growth. There's room for Kirby to outproduce his ADP, is what I'm saying. And the floor, like I think you're about to say, is pretty dang good for someone that's going 34th overall. Like, you're probably going to get an SP2 at worst, which that's probably what he was this year, right? Like, I would consider him a solid SP2. It's just people were hoping for an ace breakout, which I think sort of led to some of that disappointment factor with George Kirby.
Yeah, I mean, it is a total floor play, and I hear you on, like, the slider, and obviously there's a ton to like about him, but I remember David Mendelsohn talking about how Kirby was tweaking his slider and it could look great going into 2023. Yeah. But now it's like we're looking at three straight seasons, like you said, Steve. I mean, that's, you know, probably 300, 400 innings of what looks like a pretty consistent type of guy that's like low whip, under a strikeout per inning, mid threes ERA, and it's good. I just don't know at this range of the draft if I want to get anybody that has a big if on, like, if the slider takes a step forward. Sure. Like, I think there's still guys that, like, you know, especially when you look at Strider, Glass now, of like, if they stay healthy, and to your point, then you have, you know, an ace, proven ace. It's just, you've got health. Well, let's keep rolling though, because we got so much to get to. The next range is 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. We got like 20 pitchers we're going to rattle off from pick 50 to 100, which is where Steve and I always shop for our SP1. We got to take our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. So, Steve, in the 50s, we got Blake Snell, Garrett Cole. Big drop from where he was last year. Garrett Crochet, a little combo of the Garretts there. Yamamoto is at 50, or in the 50s as well. Then we got Pablo Lopez, Framber Valdez, Luis Castillo, Michael King, Shota Imanaga, Bryce Miller, Aaron Nola, Bailey Ober, Freddie Peralta. Oh, I'm sorry. Was I just doing 50s? I better just rattle through these.
Yeah, that's okay. Rattle through them.
Yeah, 50s was from Snell to Yamamoto with the two Garretts in there. Mm-hmm. In the 60s was Pablo, Framber, Luis Castillo. In the 70s is Michael King, Imanaga, Bryce Miller. In the 80s, let me catch my breath here, Aaron Nola, Bailey Ober, Freddie Peralta, Hunter Green, there's where Strider is right now, mm-hmm. and Tanner Bibee. In the 90s, Grayson Rodriguez, Logan Webb, Tyler Glasnow, Hunter Brown. These are exciting names. And obviously, for good reason, they're deprioritized compared to some of the ones we said in the top 10. That said, Steve, for us that are always looking for our SP1 in this zone, there's already some names I'm like, oh, I would be confident with that. I already teased the Imanaga as one that I would be excited about in the 70s there. From the innings we saw of Blake Snell last year, he looked otherworldly. I think it's too early to say that Garrett Cole isn't an SP1 with confidence. And then you got Crochet and Yamamoto that have a little bit of, I mean, maybe not in terms of the stuff, but just new to this party. Pablo Lopez, who at this time last year was like, you know, in the 30s. Framber Valdez, who had a great turnaround midway through the season. Luis Castillo, just looking through the rest of these, Steve, and we can break this up however you want to, because it gets really interesting in the 80s and 90s too. Any names or values that immediately, without further research, kind of pop out as ones that you'd be excited about?
Yeah, I hit on Glasnow and Strider before. Like, I would bump those guys up my draft board just because I can't say that they're more of an injury risk than even someone like Framber or whoever on this list. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to project who is going to be injured or not. I'm going to draft on talent. So maybe that's not the best for this exercise. But Yamamoto, I could see being back in as an SP1 for me. Same with Pablo Lopez. The second half was vintage Pablo Lopez. Even like guys like Hunter Brown. Like, Hunter Brown was a top 10 starting pitcher basically from April on, from the end of April on. So there's a lot to like there too. Like, Hunter Green, yes, he was derailed by injury at the end, but we were saying all summer how, you know, he took the necessary steps needed that we were all hoping for, and became the SP1 that everyone projected when he was, you know, a number one overall pick and the number one overall pitching prospect coming up. Blake Snell, like, we see exactly what he could do and how good he can be, and go on stretches of for a season of being not only like an SP1, but the SP1 for months at a time. Like he does that basically every single year. So yeah, I may be, you know, on the other side of the coin, a little bit more tepid on Cole, just because I think, you know, there's some degradation of his skills there. Same thing for Aaron Nola. Shota Umaga, I don't know if, as much as I loved him last year and he helped me win a title, I don't know if he has the K rate that I'm looking for when I'm trying to draft my first pitcher. But that being said, like, I would be pretty confident with in NFBC leagues or in industry leagues, like all of these guys, basically like double tapping on them as my first two pitchers, or preferably getting the back end of one of the top 11 or 12 or 13 guys, and then whichever one of these falls a little bit later. I'm pretty much good with like all of the names on this list.
Yes, I was just about to say, I want at least two here. So if my SP1 is in the 60s, I'll be back in the 80s.
Yeah,
and Hunter Green is a name that is...
So you want 2 by 100, right?
2 by 100,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
because if you wait a little bit, you're going to be a little bit of a deficit on SP1, but if you can jump right back in, what you're gaining from your hitters in the first five rounds, and then, like, I would take a Imanaga Hunter Green combo, or like a Pablo Ober or something like that, or maybe I guess you'd want to maybe balance your ratios a little bit more there. But yeah, I love this area, and it's interesting. We were talking about Grayson a couple weeks back. Here he is in the 90s. We'll see if kind of the pedigree and spring and off season start to move him up, because he's a guy that has the goods to, you know, have a limitless upside. And like you said, Hunter Brown is another one that he showed it throughout the season. So yeah, I think that's what jumped out at me with this section, is that I'm like you said, I'm good with a lot of these guys. I just definitely want 2 by 100. Okay. So we talked about a little bit on these early questions to ask, but you said if you were to take somebody in the top four rounds, you're kind of like in Skeen, Scooble, maybe even in DeGrom. I think I could endorse that.
I'd be good with Wheeler too. I'd absolutely be good with Wheeler too.
Is it wrong for me to be slightly nervous about just the volume for Skeens, just looking at him next to Scooble? Like, because Scooble, we just saw 192, and Skeens, but he's just insane with what he does, but just 133 innings from Skeens.
Yeah, he had 27 in AAA, though, last year.
Oh, okay,
too.
So he's built up. So, okay, yeah. I take it back.
So he had what? He had the 160, right? I think it's safe to project him for once. Like, 160 is bulk these days. Like, 160 mm-hmm. is what you get from the top end. Yeah, there's not many. I'll pull it up, but there were 61 guys with 160 innings.
Ooh. Okay. But still, so, when you math that out, it's like everybody's top five SPs are getting 160. So it's not like he would be getting like
some guys on here that, like, you know, Patrick Corbin and
right, you know
Miles Michaelis and Griffin Canning, like
innings eaters.
There's innings eaters on there too. But essentially, yeah, you're more than happy if you get 60 to 175 innings. I guess 175 innings is a better cutoff, because there were 32 pitchers that got there.
But you could take that step.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And then is there anybody I talked about Kirby. Is there anybody from the list of this top 100 that is just striking you as a do not draft, not interested?
Yeah.
At least on the outset.
I think Corbin Burnes is on my do not draft list.
Yeah, kind of same.
Like, this looks like, you know, George Kirby with just a little bit more of an ERA luck. Like, he has all the same ERA estimators, just a 2.92 ERA. Yeah, the walk rate's good. The K rate's now for the last 2 years, it was 25. It went from 2021 to 2024. Here's
Burns'
K rates. 37%, 36%, 31%, 26%, 23%. So yeah, there's just a steady decline there that I'm not really interested in paying a top five starting pitcher price, where if I'm projecting some improvement, I'm going to project for like a 25 to 26% strikeout rate. Like, no, I want the upside of a 30% strikeout rate. And I'm not sure that that's there with Corbin Burnes. You know, he did, you know, tweak and add the cutter, and then that led to the breakout. And like, I think he was tweaking towards the end of last season and overcame a tough stretch. So who knows? Maybe there is another level here and another change to his repertoire or something that he can work on in the off season and come out and relive that back, you know, and throw it back to a 30% strikeout rate of a true ace. But I'm not willing to pay that price when I could project other guys at later rounds, like even like a Dylan Cease, Cole Reagans, a Blake Snell, that are going to get me the strikeouts that Corbin Burnes is a question mark for me.
Yep.
Even compared to Kirby, like Kirby is younger and hasn't had that breakout yet. I could see him with that elite command and just you know, being someone that has shown growth and has an elite fastball and command of it. I would be more comfortable projecting him for a jumping carry rate than even Corbin Burnes.
That's fair. I, unlike you, Steven, I know it's hypotheticals because of where we draft pitchers anyway, but I will have a hard time getting any DeGrom just because we're now looking at since 2019 that he's eclipsed a 93 inning season, and it looks worse when you go down that line. The other one I would throw in here that I won't be getting any of is Tanner Bibee. He's solid. He just doesn't, to me, it's like he doesn't have the swing and miss. He doesn't have the extension. The arsenal combo doesn't excite me that much. The velocity doesn't excite me that much. He's okay. Like, he's good. But with the names going around him, I'm always going to be more interested in like a Hunter Brown, Grayson, Hunter Green than Bibee, so I can already tell I won't have much of Bibee unless there's like a real value where he falls a round or two. So that's kind of where I would land on that question of who we're scared of at these ADPs. Let's jump in because we're cruising here, as we knew this would run the risk of being a long show. Big breath here for the 100 and 200, 100 to 200 range. I tried to keep a theme here that we're building our wizard staffs because this is where you and I usually have SP 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And this group I've kind of lumped into some different windows of ADP range. So from pick 100 to 115, we have Joe Ryan, Jack Flaherty, Max Fried, Zach Gallen, and Spencer Schwellenbach. Interesting names there. 115 to 130 is Carlos Rodon, Brian Wu, Shane McClanahan, Justin Steele, Kodai Senga, Sonny Gray. Some names that are more familiar in that bunch, but a little bit of the can they do it again comeback version. 130 to 150, we got Ronaldo Lopez, Jared Jones, Kevin Gausman, Robbie Ray, and Shane Baz. Kind of a mix of the up-and-comers versus the twilight can they do it again. And then the 150 to 175 range, Yusei Kikuchi, Sandy Alcantara, Luis Gil, Brandon Pfaadt, Seth Lugo, Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepiot, Zach Eflin. And rounding out when you kind of get into dart throw territory, 175-200, Bowden Francis, Sean Manaea, Nick Pivetta, Christopher Sanchez, Clark Schmidt at the very end. Open board, Steve. What jumps out at you on this big, big list of names from 100 to 200?
So I have general ideas of how I want to approach this range and then the next range. In this range, I want like upside, stuff, and age. Not necessarily in that order, but like mostly in that order. So like guys that have the high ceiling with the best stuff that are, 25 to 26, maybe coming off like their first or second year that they're rounding
the
form.
Ascent.
Yeah. Yep. Or even guys that are, you know, like a Shane McClanahan that's coming back from Tommy John. Like, I want to take big swings here. This is where I want to take big swings. I like, you know, Joe Ryan, if he's healthy, Brian Wu, Shane McClanahan, Kodai Senga, Jared Jones, I'll be all over at the pick 130 to 150 range if that stays. Even like, you know, Sandy Alcantara, Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepio, like give me all those guys over like Lugo, Eflin,
Gaussman,
even like a Robbie Ray, or Sonny Gray, for sure. Shane Boz, I talked about last episode how despite the lack of eye popping numbers and stuff, like it was still like productive from him, like being a pitcher and like pitching well, throughout the season. So like, you know, there was an old adage that you always want the pitcher the second year back after the Tommy John, especially, in Boz's case where he was out like for more than the full season, right? Like he came mm-hmm. back. It was like some of these guys come back like in the 13, 14 months. Boz was like the full, like 18 to 24 months. Tommy John that we used to see, you know, the Rays do slow play their guys, and maybe that'll be the case with McClanahan too, but he's a little older and had some more innings and is closer to free agency, as sad as it is to look at that as that approach. But that's how the Rays look at it from their perspective. So even guys like Boz I'll be in on. So this is the range where, like, if you like a guy and you like his stuff and you like his upside, this is where I want, like, you know, essentially, this should be my third pitcher in NFBC leagues. I think maybe in the past it's been my first or second, which I think was a big mistake. You know, maybe in home leagues and daily leagues, I could see this being maybe my first and second pitcher, just because I mm-hmm. like to play it a little bit more risky when you can make more moves and you know your league a little bit better and your league mates. But and there are daily moves or something like that. Even still, I think I would want one pitcher before this range. It's a little bit dicey, even for me. But there's a lot of names to like, and I think it's sort of like, okay, find the guys you like and take big swings here.
Yeah. Heard across the board on there, and I agree. Like a Jared Jones is exciting. Boz is very exciting. I'm having a hard time looking at some of these aging guys at where they're going. And I feel like that's on brand for me on like the old man squad a little bit, but like the season Manaea just put in, and we're talking about like a 12 or like a 14th rounder there for Manaea is just,
So you're hesitant on that, or I'm just
hesitant on your philosophy that like, I think Manaea is interesting. Although it's a little bit steep, I think Sonny Gray.
So you're saying you would like Manaea over like a Pepio or Taj Bradley, potentially?
I think
yeah.
possibly.
Yeah, that's fair. And Manaea also, like there's you could have a hype rant on Manaea there because like he changed his arm slot, his stuff improved.
Right.
Yes. You know, he was. You know, he had a run that was reminiscent of an SP1 from July, from the All-Star break on, essentially.
I fell in that trap with Pivetta last year, but the cost isn't prohibitive. You know what I mean? Like if
sure.
You know, Kikuchi in the second half had made a bunch of tweaks and found it with the Astros, and he had a 90 strikeouts over 70 innings and a 105 WHIP. Mm-hmm. Like he's going past pick 150. That's interesting to me, but I know what you're saying, that those guys probably aren't going to be the home runs that you might get with Pepio, who we both like. So
yeah,
I like the value. I think more than anything, it just solidifies that there is a lot of value to be had here. And I think that's one one thing that we'll talk about with Nick, because as we waited and waited and then we loaded up on some of these guys, it felt like it was like round after round where it was like, man, there's so much value here. So that's a little tease for our pod with Nick. But yeah, a lot of interesting names here. I felt like the season we had from Manaea, I was surprised to see him this deep. But overall, I'm trying to think if there's any other, a lot of the names you flagged are also exciting to me. And I think that very first tier of Joe Ryan, Flaherty, Fried, Gallen, and Schwellenbach, like that's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see where those move. Flaherty, obviously the terrible postseason for the most part, I think will kind of suppress, and he even has like some of the volume question marks, but like Schwellenbach just seemed incredible every time we were talking about him. And all of his underlying stuff looks great. And he's 24 years old on a team that's going to get a lot of wins. So, yeah, that range definitely feels like I might even go three pitchers in four rounds, starting with, like, pick 75 or something, because I like that whole zone. Like a Max Fried at pick 110 or something would be phenomenal. So, yeah, good names here.
Yeah, Fried was drafted comfortably as an SP1, right? But then he got hurt. Like everyone predicted, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, then we get beyond pick 200, which we'll get into some of these names to round out the show. These are the very fun feast or famine ones, but we'll take our second ad break. And we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, this is the trick or treat grab bag. And really, when it doesn't work out, you're not too upset at this stage in the draft. This is the go get your guy territory where it seems like the ADP min pick max pick will swing all over the place. This is also where we were getting names like Jack Flaherty, Ronaldo Lopez, Luis Gil that I mentioned, who else? I mean, Jared Jones, certainly. Some of those guys that were surging throughout the season were beyond pick 200, and even like the fast movers like a Brian Wu or a Pepio might start here and then climb up. So I expect these names to be totally different in March in terms of where they're going, because a handful of these ones will get the industry hype. But to do the rattle off here, and then we'll go through the same exercise from 200 to 250, we have Eovaldi, Brandon Woodruff, Tanner Houck, Mackenzie Gore, Jeffrey Springs, Yu Darvish, Ronel Blanco, Jose Berrios, Jackson Jobe, Cutter Crawford, Gavin Williams, Luis Severino, Nick Lodolo still hanging around, Spencer Arrighetti, Ranger Suarez. That's 200 to 250. Of those names, I'm gonna guess. I feel like you like Gore, based on what we've talked about. I know you like Jackson Jobe, and for good reason. Are there any other names in here that really jump off for you from 200 to 250?
I have a different approach, at least for draft and hold and deeper leagues for right now. Okay. In this area, I want innings. I want to take my shot on upside guys in the last range. That I still could project a good amount of innings, but at least for draft and hold and deeper leagues in this range, I want your old, you're tired, you're boring. Not your weak, but you're boring. I want Luis Severino.
Darvish.
Nate Eovaldi. I want you, Darvish. I think there's opportunity to zig where people zag, and you know, people take. You know, we took. It gets different in the pitcherless mock draft. Like at the end, like yeah, we threw darts on Jackson Jobe and Kumar Rocker because it's a 12-team Yahoo Daily Move League, right? Like, yes, I love those guys. I love Mackenzie Gore in that area. Yes, I even, you know, I'll still be loco for Lodolo and take another shot on him as my last pick in the 12-team league. But if we're talking like draft and hold season, which I think that this kind of time of year is catered to, I don't want, Andrew Painter. I want Rhys Olson, who I could project for 150 innings. I don't know if I could project, maybe Rhys Olson's a bad example because he's hurt. But I want Nestor Cortez, who has the fourth spot locked
in the Yankees rotation, and his projection of a 3.9 ERA with 170 Ks in 180 innings, something like that, or whatever.
So,
whatever,
yeah,
you want to project
him
for. Yeah.
So that's strictly draft and hold. And I think
draft and hold, or deeper NFBC leagues, honestly, even.
Yeah, so that's the insurance policy on you taking some of the more exciting ones in the previous zone, like you said. In a kind of standard head-to-head, your industry leagues, home leagues, where you're looking just strictly at guys you think could pop. Who are some of your favorite names from this list?
I like David Festa. I think there was a lot to like at the end of the year. We talked about him with Thomas Nestico a bunch. And he really, he had a few rough starts where he gave a bunch of homers in the first few starts, and then he kind of found his stride. And then the Twins were, like, battling for a playoff spot, so they're really only letting him and who else was there? The exciting young arm on Minnesota. Who should probably be in this list, but they're essentially only letting him go like 3 to 4 innings, like 1.5 times through the lineup, even if that really only one time through the lineup, just because that's kind of how they were approaching their starts. Bubba Chandler looks like, Jackson Jobe is the best pitching prospect and highest upside on this list, Bubba Chandler may be the second and maybe also be knocking on the door. I like him there. Brandon Woodruff's a great name to keep in mind coming back from injury. He did sign that 2-year deal, so like when he got hurt, the Brewers paid him for the rehab year, and then now we're getting him next year. Kumar Rocker, the stuff looked electric in the small sample that we saw him at the end of the last year. So and your boy Ryan Nelson, you talked about how improved his
change.
His fastball was at the end of the season, right? Like he basically like went all fastball, which I don't know. Maybe that's a little concerning.
He started throwing his changeup more too. Which was that was a Brozdowski tip there. But Nelson had a great end of the year. Yeah, those are good
names. One more from me. I'll be back in on Bobby Miller at this price. I truly believe that last year was injury related, and there was a clear point that he got hurt. And wasn't the same since. So I would like to see what a full offseason of recovery and hopefully a healthy offseason for Bobby Miller looks like.
Yep, you got me sold on that one. And that's one where it's like, that there's a discount from people that were burned, but pick 300, really, for a guy that we were ready to call like an SP1 just 12 months ago. I like that. So much potential with the And it's really interesting that you said that, though, Steve, because that's gonna have me thinking. And I do think there's some wisdom to kind of backing into an SP4 or 5 here as like an insurance policy if you go risky with the prior range. What I am already thinking is I think there's a fork in the road on getting tried and true between 100 and 200 and then going with some, feast or famine guys here or vice versa, where you go for, your Jared Jones, your Shane Boz, and then you turn around and pair it with like a Yu Darvish, Severino.
There's more proven upside, if that makes sense, in that for, like, we saw Jared Jones, do it and have this amazing fastball and have more than two pitches and look really good for the first stretch of, his first 10 or so starts. Got hurt, didn't really look the same, but we saw some evidence there, right? Like, we saw Shane Boz come back and pitch. Like, I think there's a little bit more to believe in.
Gore, you have to make it through, even with all the strikeouts, you got to make it through the fact that it's looked as ugly as it's looked good.
Yeah, Gore, another guy, like, he really turned it around at the end of the season, too, as rough as his, like, July and August, or, from like mid June to mid August were for him. So there's a lot to like with all these guys.
He's one I like.
That's why pitching's so fun. There's so many guys to like.
It is. I will be back in on Jeffrey Springs. I was too excited about what he did before he got TJ, and then, like you said, it's kind of second season. after. And even the first season, you know, there were some indicators, but still a 3.27 ERA over a strikeout per inning for a guy that, yes, he's 32, but in terms of mileage, he's only had one season in the bigs where he's pitched over 100 innings. So take that for what it is. But I will be back at a beyond pick 200 price for Jeffrey Springs. Yeah, and then, yeah, some other names we you touched on. Andrew Painter will be one to kind of keep an eye on. Drew Rasmussen's in this back half of the 250 to 300. Brian Bayo, you hit on Rocker, and then Hurs, Birdsong, Bobby Miller are the last three guys that all have a lot of upside, but I do think Bobby Miller's is the most proven versus Hurs and Birdsong that have extreme command control issues. So yeah, that's the landscape, Steve. I guess let's get the closing thoughts and then off to watch what is now a 5-5 barn burner.
Yeah.
World Series.
And TJ's chirping us as we're recording at the World Series on. So I had to send him a picture of the multitask I got going on now from our Twitter account. So, yeah, I think my biggest takeaway is sort of how I'm going to approach pitching risk. Like someone there was a back and forth debate, I think, between like Joe Orrico and Alex Chamberlain, and Alex Chamberlain had a great tweet about how pitching always looks deep until the first 2 weeks of April when everyone gets hurt. Like essentially there's like a, you know, it's like a horse race, right? Like it's like who gets out of the gate. You guys have to make it out of the gate. Not everybody does. I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but that's what I'm yeah. thinking of right now. But I think that there's really not that much of a way to tell. Like who would have known that Strider would have got hurt this year? Like he had no signs of that. Like. Sure, like I guess you can, you know, everyone's going to put up the velocity readings and how everyone gets hurt from the previous year, but like that's also what determines skill, right? So I'm just going to draft skill. I'm not going to like completely throw out injury risk out the window, but I'm not going to weigh it as heavily when doing the pitchers and just hope that I don't draw the short straw injury wise. Maybe that'll come back to bite me, but that's sort of how I'm looking at it from a pitching approach, especially if I am going to have to dabble into pitching a little bit earlier in those industry leagues to build the staff. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are two marked changes I'm hearing is that you'll be in a little bit sooner this year and then you'll be getting some stability late, which are two big changes. So I like that. And I'll wait to form my opinions fully on approach, but I definitely love SP1 and 2 between pick 50 and 100. And I might even go SP3 early in the 100s. And yeah, there are already some names that are pretty dang exciting at where they're going for me. Just to rattle. I mean, I like Imanaga in the 70s. I like Hunter Green a lot in the 80s. I like Hunter Brown where he's at there. I think you're right on Senga. I will be getting either Raylo or Jared Jones in that zone. I think that's nice. And then I think I might be going for a little age with Manaea. Manaea or Kikuchi. If those guys are holding that discount, I might try to see if where they landed at the end of last season is legit. And yeah, I loved all the deep throw names you threw out there, Steve. I know you've been bringing up Kumar Rocker a lot. Jackson Jobe. I like these names back here. Jeffrey Springs. So it'll be a fun offseason. We'll be talking about these guys all the way through March. But that rounds us out for episode 160. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. Happy offseason, and hope you enjoy the World Series for more than just tonight.
There you go. I guess we know who you're pulling for. Thanks for listening, guys. Happy Halloween. Enjoy the baseball. If there's any left of it, we'll find out
tonight to see if they're playing again over the weekend. I hope so too. Just
our timeline's
as
all
baseball fun.
But
yeah,
that's
right.
It.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Later.
Later.